Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 128 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, we are live from Rafa in DC with Brittley Bowman and Dan Chabanoff from the Richard Sachs Cyclocross team. It was great to have them in town. This was recorded a few weeks back during the DCCX weekend, so a couple things are in there, are a little time traveling back to there, but I think it's a worthwhile conversation regardless. I want to thank them for coming out and doing that, and also thank Rafa for having us out. They have been great coming into DC, becoming a sponsor and part of DCCX this year, which was awesome. Also becoming a sponsor of the CX Hairs Devo team, and really breathing a little more life into the cycling community in the DC area. So it's great to have them as a partner and as a new entity in the cycling community in DC. So thank you to Rafa. This podcast today, this episode that you are listening to, is brought to you by Ruts and Guts, which is a UCI weekend. C1, C2 weekend in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, happens December 8th and 9th. This is the ninth year of this race. First time that I'm going to get out there, and I'm really excited to do it. We're going to be filming a cyclocross television episode for the C1 day, and then also hanging out and just taking in what I've always heard is one of the best produced races in the country. So really looking forward to being out there, and I think you should go out there too. It may be a destination for you, but it's the last great tune-up before nationals. In fact, you can just go and make a couple weeks of it. Go to Ruts and Guts for the weekend and then drive to Louisville and then race in nationals, and you'll already be flying by the time that you get there. So check out rutsandguts.org. We'll see you out there December 8 and 9. Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. That is what this show is a part of. You know that if you've listened before. If you haven't listened before, get on over to wideanglepodium.com. You are going to see a stable of the most awesome cycling podcasts and other podcasts. We're not always about cycling. There's the consummate athlete that hits on a ton of other topics. We got Kids Don't Follow. We've been plotting out new episodes for that show. Adam Meyerson, when he does episodes, like check out his last one, not always about cycling. So it's a wide variety, and we want you to be part of that community. And you can do that by going to wideanglepodium.com. You can click on that Become a Member on the right-hand side of the page, and then it'll give you the opportunity to either become a monthly recurring member or just a one-time donation, whatever fits your budget now. But we would love to have your support. While you're there, you can also buy some coffee from our partners at Grimpure Brothers. They have the Full Schleck, which is an awesome coffee. It's one of my faves. So go buy some coffee, become a member of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, and do me a personal favor. This is my plea to you for cyclocross television and cyclocross radio. Go tell your friends about it. Go share the word. Go get them to subscribe as well. It's sort of like being a race promoter running a podcast. You're always looking at those numbers and wondering when, you know, they go up a little bit and they go down a little bit, and you're trying to figure out why. You know, we're going to be here. We're going to give you this cyclocross coverage week in and week out and try to make it interesting for you. If you think there's anything that we can improve on, shoot me an email, feedback@cxhairs.com, and I will certainly read and respond to all of those. And and then subscribe. And that's it. That's all I got. Go follow me on YouTube. I'm doing a lot of stuff there, and I want you to be a part of it. Okay. We got Brittley and Dan live from Rafa. We're going to talk to them, and we are going to do that right now.
First thing that's going to be weird is we're actually going to hold microphones, even though there's no sound system, because in order to make this work, and I'm actually going to do my levels here as we go, we have to have some sort of recording of this event. So that's why. So we can actually call it a podcast. So we're going to do our little sound check now. I'm going to start with you, Dan. Dan, how's it going?
Good, Bill. How's it going? Hi, everybody. My name is Dan Chabanoff. I race for the Richard Sacks Cyclocross team for the last 8 years, I think. I've lost track. And I love coming to DC for the race. This is the second year I think we've had an event at RAFA for this race, which is great. And I just want to thank everybody for coming out. Hopefully we'll have a section where everybody gets to ask fun questions. And yeah, Bill.
Brittley, your turn.
Is please, his microphone working?
Yeah, wow, look at you. You are all into it. Perfect. Yeah, why don't you introduce yourself?
Is this one working?
You are number two.
Hi, I'm Brittley Bowman. I've been racing for the Sacks team this is my sixth season, and I don't know what else to say. Hello.
All right, great. Well, I have to do this. This may make no sense if you haven't listened to the show, but I have this partner that we started this podcast network, and when I do live events, he's always like, dude, you don't have intro music. You need your intro music for when you have a podcast. It's not professional, so.
That's really professional.
There we go. I got it now. I'm just looking to check the boxes, and now I have checked that box. Anybody know what song that is?
It's the Beastie Boys.
Oh, you cheated. Okay.
Now we can start. I don't know what song it is.
Electric Worm, off their instrumental album. Don't tell them, or all the podcasts will disappear, too. We get to gang up on Britt Lee because she's new to the whole podcast experience. Dan and I have done this many, many, many times. So if you want to know all about Dan and his history, you should go back to like one of the previous shows that we did. So you don't have to.
I think the first time I was on was episode 8.
Whoa, really?
I think I was episode 8.
This will be episode 125 or 26.
And then there was the Dan and Dan show in the basement.
That was a good one. That was
fun. Then there was the Richard Sacks show at one of the Asheville Nationals?
Yes.
I think it was Asheville Nationals. Yep. And I was on that. And I think I've...
You popped in. I would just call you every once in a while just to chat. So we did that too.
Yeah, you would just call me up when you had no one else to talk to.
Well, you know, but that's a... Like Johnny Carson used to do that. You know, somebody didn't show up. They always had their favorites that they went to. So,
you're Johnny Carson.
That's an esteemed position. No, I'm saying you're the guest in that. You're the Carol Burnett.
Cool. Well, thanks.
Carrie Werner, Becca Farringer, Emily Werner taking your place in my basement this year. I think we should just put it out there right now that they have to outdo the Dan and Dan show.
I mean, they at least have to record a podcast and stay up way too late on Saturday night and drink a bunch.
Yeah, I don't know if that's in their training plan.
I got nothing.
Encourage it.
Yeah. All right, Brittley, let's talk some bike racing.
Uh-oh.
Let's start from the start. Where did the interest in bikes happen? And you have to put the microphone up to your face. There you go.
My interest in bikes happened when I was in college, and I was in Providence, Rhode Island, and I was in senior year, and it was like a combination of wanting to get to class faster and then kind of meeting some people who were riding bikes to get to like the warehouse parties in Providence. And I wanted to be friends with those people and go to those parties and also get to class faster. So I brought my bike from childhood up to Providence, which was like a crappy mountain bike of sorts, and I was riding that to class at first, and then basically ended up getting after I got a bike from the thrift store, and then I ended up having that stolen. I got a fixed gear, and that was like the first bike I bought from a bike shop, and I was super excited about it, and I rode that all around town. I ended up doing a bike race that was just like a street bike race in Providence, And
who talked you into buying a fixed gear bike?
The guy at the bike shop. Okay. I literally walked in and I was like, I bought a BMX from the thrift store a month ago and then someone stole it and I don't know. I just want something simple and I don't know what fits me.
2007. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And yeah.
Dan,
and
where is that in the rise and the fall of the street fixie?
That was a good time. That was a good time. Yeah, yeah. I think
that's
that was
right in the heart of it.
So I think like 2004 to 2006, like if you started riding track bikes then, you could kind of like claim some OG status.
I didn't know what a fixed gear was when I bought it. I literally was like, what bike here fits me? And the guy was like, this one, because it has 650 wheels. It was the Fuji Track, and that was like the one that came small enough.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But because the 49 of like any bike was too big for me. So
I think you and I first met at like a messenger event in New York because I was a bike messenger at the time and you were just friends with a bunch of people.
Yeah. Well, I got into going to the like bike messenger races because of that one in Providence. And then you know, there's like three bike messengers in Providence, so you wouldn't really call it a messenger race, but it's like a checkpoint race. And I really liked that format. And honestly, if anybody like wants to put that on in some kind of like larger format, I'm in. But
I mean,
not on the street.
Do them in New York.
I know, not on the street though. Like, I don't want to have to navigate traffic. But
oh.
No, I want, like, if somebody wants to do, like, a worldwide treasure hunt show on bikes, I'm in. Just putting it out there. I'll go back to that. On bikes.
It's called NAC.
I was going to say NAC's more like that.
Yeah, NAC is, they do. Although the just Philly, have, the you Philly just NAC just happened.
Wait,
yeah.
I've been to the NAC before. I'm talking about worldwide.
Okay, all right.
No, I mean like where you travel the like world you, yeah. during the race.
Yeah,
you
know? She wants to like literally ride
literally
between
globally.
Cities.
All right, well, we'll start the funding on that and see where we can go.
Bill's on it. He's got nothing to do.
I was just going to say that Dan when Brittley said fixie and Dan said track bike, and I just feel like you're contractually obligated not to say fixie now, just coming off the whole Red Hook thing.
I mean, I think like Tuesday before the race, Dave got really bored and just like started some shit on Instagram, like, you know, basically started an internet fight on the Red Hook Crit Instagram about whether, you know, calling people out for using the word fixie. And
I didn't even know this. Yeah, this was just,
I mean, this is...
For those that don't know, Dan was in Italy for the Red Hook Crit. Is Milan the... are there three? Is Barcelona still... Or?
So just this year, there was two.
Okay.
We had an issue with Red Hook Crit Brooklyn where the venue, which is owned by the Port Authority but managed by a private company, and the private company was just like, surprise, we're going to charge you like $200K more. And we just didn't have enough money to put on London or Barcelona this year. And so we just did Brooklyn and we did Milan and... I think it could go several ways next year. It could either not happen at all. We could do just two races, or we could do like eight races. So it really depends on who comes in terms of like funding.
Right.
Yeah.
Brittley was had a track bike. She just bought it. Just hanging out with messengers. How do we get from there to racing bikes?
Well, so there was that race in Providence, and then I basically like. Went to New York on, I think, like Christmas break after that. And I don't know, I just started going to any race that I heard of because I just thought it was so fun. And I probably met you at one of those races, Dan. I don't know.
I think
when.
It was at Casina.
Oh, maybe at the track.
I think
yeah.
we were racing track. Together somehow.
Yes, so I got into riding bikes and then racing bikes and then racing like street races just because that was what I was finding that I heard of and whatever and thought was fun. And then I went bike touring for a little while and then came back and started going to the track. So I probably met Dan in 2008.
Yeah, there was like a really interesting overlap in like 2007, 2008 where like there's a lot of bike messengers that were racing Alley Cats, but also going to the track every Wednesday, which is when we had the Wednesday night races at Casina, and people would just like ride there. swap their wheels around, swap their pedals, and race the bikes that they were like riding through the city every day. And that was kind of a cool time.
Yeah. I loved Wednesday nights at the track. I would go like every Wednesday night for a couple years.
Yeah.
That was really how I got like passionate about sanctioned racing.
That was my first sanctioned racing. I stopped going after I figured out I wasn't very good at track racing.
Basically. I kept getting second every time. There weren't a lot of people, but it was like consistently I wasn't the person winning. But
that's an entry. It's interesting because that's another sort of point of entry into racing that I think just in the last going on 20 years now, we've sort of seen change the traditional how do people get into bike racing. You know, it used to be you were a junior, you were racing on the road, you know, and you got faster and you did it and you sort of went up through the ranks. And if you didn't get in there early, it was kind of done, you know. And then that's why I always look at cyclocross as this great thing, because it's this really easy, you know, low stakes way to start racing. And we saw in that time frame a lot of the messenger community. We saw tons here in D.C. and Philadelphia and even New York who, like, you know, the track is a new one. I didn't really think about that. But moving into cyclocross from that, it seemed like sort of this natural move from one sport to the other.
I went from track and then feeling like there wasn't enough racing at the track to trying road racing just because I wanted more racing. And then suddenly the season was over and I was like, what? I want to race more. What is this cyclocross you speak of? And so I tried cyclocross because I wanted to race more.
Where do you feel now where you're at as far as a mix between racing on the road versus racing cyclocross? Do you feel like you have a primary discipline or is it just all the same?
Cyclocross is definitely my primary. Okay. I like my road racing has become less of my personal interest over the last couple of years. And like this last season, I only did maybe 13 or so races. I've had seasons where I've done like almost 40 road races, but that's like crits and stuff. So they're not all like 3-hour races.
I feel like I should point out that that's because you're running like an elite level women's road team now.
I've been managing a team. Yeah.
Is that you in your second or third year doing this?
Actually I've managed a team for 6 years.
6 years. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I like whatever. Yeah. It's called the Meteor Intelligentsia. And I think
how many women, what's the makeup of that team and where do you what's the travel like? What's the schedule?
We had I think like 7 women on the team this year. The team races a national calendar, so doing the USA Crit Series and Pro Road Tour races, UCI races also. So we start with a team camp in California for 10 days and then went up and did the Chico stage race in California and then over to Speed Week in South Carolina, Georgia. We do the UCI races at Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and Dairylands in Wisconsin. And, I mean, all over. We went to Arkansas because one of our main sponsors, the Meteor, is from there, their cafe there, and bike shop. And, so we went to the Joe Martin stage race, UCI stage race. That was the first time we ever tried something like that as a group, and also to the Intelligentsia Cup in Chicago, which is also an event that was from our sponsor, Intelligentsia Coffee. So yeah, all over.
So do you feel like maybe some of the decrease in racing comes from sort of the responsibilities of managing?
Yeah, for sure. I've progressed in my cycling, in road racing, and like had a progression of my interest in it. And then I kind of like got to a point where my teammates were all like better than me, instead of me being like the driving person to be like, let's go farther, let's race higher level stuff. And then got to the point where it was like everybody else was like racing really at that level. And then I had a few injuries in the 2016 season, and then from there have kind of had like a reset on what I feel like doing with road racing for my personal racing aspirations.
And from that team and how what that atmosphere is like, and just road racing in general, going from that to the Richard Sachs team, you know, what's the change when the season comes?
I love not being the person running stuff and just being the athlete. That's really awesome about being on the Sachs team. Richard's always taking care of everything, and Dan's helping to do a lot of management stuff this year. And
I write a lot of emails that no one reads.
I read your emails when they come my way. But that's what being a manager is.
It's a lot of Googling, too, that yeah. riders could be doing that they're just yeah. not.
Dan, can you send me the size chart for those leg warmers? He's like, Google.com. it's really
that,
nice.
Does that happen to you on the road?
I think I have.
Do you feel constantly ignored by your riders?
Yeah, there's a website that's called letmegooglethatforyou.com. I'm pretty sure that exists. It's definitely, it's like, this is an expression that I learned from Dan. It's like herding cats. It's nice to be able to just race and do my part as an athlete instead of all the other
stuff. So you need to just start your emails like I think I've done this before. You just start your email with, you're not going to read this time, but put it in a folder, and when I send it again, read it then, because then it's going to be important. You know, and just keep doing that. It's the. So how's it going running, helping manage a team? Oh, no, I got to start with this before that. What's your road schedule like? What's your road racing? You done? Completely out?
I think I did 3 road races this year. I did, there's the Philly Flyer race. Mostly I do road racing because it starts earlier than cross-country mountain bike racing. And I get antsy during the winter, and I, like, want to ride my bike fast. But cross-country mountain bike racing doesn't start until, like, April, which is the same time to start mountain bike racing. And for some reason, people want to have road races in New York, like, March 3rd, which is insane, but I can't resist for some reason. So
that's when all of us cyclocross people get to go. It's not road season. It's too early to race road. Can't race road in March.
Well, see, I'm one of those cyclocross people that just like I don't actually want to race past Christmas.
Yeah. No. For sure.
You know, like I have when I like. Open Velo News or Cycling News, whatever, in February, and they're still racing cross in Europe. I'm just like,
I one time finished my cross season on February 15th.
Yeah, and I had no interest in doing anything like that.
That well, was ridiculous.
My theory is that like if cyclocross had been born in a country with a warm climate, then we wouldn't all be like, oh, it's got to be snowy and rainy and muddy for it to be cyclocross season, just because that's how it is in Belgium, like 10 and a half months a year.
You mean then, like, cross would start in July?
Well, whatever, wherever it would start, it wouldn't be like we're not getting an authentic cyclocross, you know, experience because it's nice out and our family can be out here and the kids can play around and... And what fun is that? We want it to be, you know, we have to wear boots that are covered in 6 inches of mud. That's cyclocross. I'm trying. That's my goal this year is to fight that perception.
I don't know if you can record sarcasm on that thing.
Oh, no, I do it all the time.
Okay.
It comes through. There's a filter. No, but it's one of the things. I think that makes American cyclocross unique in that we are an enormous country. We have a lot of different climates. We have a lot of different, you know, the people in Florida can't say that they're not getting an authentic cyclocross experience just because they're racing in Florida.
Well, that, for me, is I think my biggest pet peeve is when people complain about the heat, you know, in cross racing, because it's just like, listen, it's an outdoor sport, guys. You know, like, you do it outside, so the weather is just the weather. It sucks for everybody. I don't know.
Yeah, you race to the conditions. I mean, yeah. in the same way.
I hate that in general. Just people, it's like always complete. It doesn't even have to do with sports. It's just like, it's like people are like, I have nothing to talk about. I'm going to complain about it's too hot or it's too cold, except for one day a year. Maybe two. It's
like half the premise of this podcast
is to complain?
Yeah.
No.
Well, when I'm on it.
Well, that's true.
I mean, complaining is my pastime.
Yeah. Yeah. I lost that great thing I was going to say now. So say something great.
Well, we could pivot to this weekend's events. You know,
let's do that. I will tell you this, that and maybe I'll be wrong, but I keep, like, Ed who introduced us all earlier was talking about how it's going to be rainy this weekend, which I don't think is true.
Weather forecast says no. It says cloudy, and then I was seeing an hour of rain at like 4 a.m. on Sunday, so that will not affect us.
I will tell you this for DCCX is that we've never had a muddy race, and we've had wet races. There's never been a muddy race. I don't think it's. I will be the first to admit I'm wrong if we're out there in ankle deep mud, but the way it all flows into that lake, this is my theory. So it's never muddy. It just gets a little wet. And
yeah, let's talk about how it's not going to rain or be muddy this weekend some more.
Well,
I
here's
can't
the
wait
other
for
thing.
This to come out
here's
on
the,
Sunday.
Here's the other thing is that you want a little bit of rain, because as much as, you know, Bruce over here and I love it when it's hot and dusty and there's just these amazing dust clouds in the morning at 8 a.m. with the sun shining through it and it looks beautiful. It's not the most fun to race through the dust cloud.
But didn't you want to bring your family and have a nice time at the event and not have to
deal
with
it's
the
not
rain?
Gonna rain. That's the thing. They're used to it. They grew up with this stuff. They have the keys to the car. They know where to go hide.
So who's promoting this thing now that you're just recording podcasts all week?
Promoting what?
I don't know. Who's like
the race?
Yeah, logistics. Who's
I was
who's staking
promoting
stuff?
My butt off. What do you mean?
I don't know. What were you doing?
No, we have a great, you know, DCMTB is our local mountain bike club. They started DCCX. It's in year, I'm going to get this wrong, I believe 12. And they've always been it. They've been sort of the main push. Crosshair Cycling, which is my team, we came in 5, 6 years ago, and then we went to a weekend. We kind of helped them go from one day to 2 days, and then from 2 days we became a UCI event. So this is our fourth year being UCI C2.
Is this the first year where there is not a conflict race?
Yeah, I think so.
How excited are you?
Well, it's nice, but it's kind of like we weren't drawing that much from California as it was, and we used to go up against CXLA. I think that they finally, honestly, people in Colorado did not know that Ohio and D.C. were close to each other. That was the thing that was just beyond.
Yeah, I thought the first year you were up against like Cincy.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Cincy. It was this new Cleveland UCI race that lasted a year.
I'm not gonna drive out there.
Yeah, but I think we might have gone up against HPCX 1 year as well, or it was like, it was this really weird conflict. No, I think they ended up moving.
Yeah, I don't remember HPCX and DC ever conflicting. Yeah, but that would really suck because I like both those races. Although I personally prefer DC just because.
Well, what do you think about that? I mean, the argument always is that, you know, we can have these regional races, you know, a West Coast race and an East Coast race because there are enough racers to and not enough money to travel anywhere. Do you think that's good, or do you think it's better if there are less races and everybody's kind of forced to race against each other? I'm looking at you, Brilly.
I mean, I like racing in a full field. It kind of feels like wrong when only 20 people line up and you know, it, I mean, of course it's great opportunity. I got fourth at KMC, but, you know, it feels more, legit when you're lining up with like 40 or 50 people.
Have you looked at the field for this weekend?
I didn't.
Yeah, it's good.
How many people are in it?
I don't even know. It's 30 to 40 for the women.
Good.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a nice field. It should be a good competitive race. I mean, yeah. It's okay too, but
I would presume the women's race is more stacked, honestly.
It is. Yeah, for
that's,
sure.
That's pretty typical, honestly, I think, in New England versus the Mid-Atlantic. Just because I think for the top guys, there are a lot of guys that live in California and the West Coast and then like the Colorado area, but I think Mid-Atlantic, Northeast, like there's so many women that are like in the top 20 ranked UCI riders in the country that it's really hard to draw a weak field for the women.
Yeah, getting confirmation 33 in the women's field. So that's nice.
That's great.
And this is, you know, not to get too into the weeds, but how this scheduling, we're already there, digging my way back out. You know, one of the things that we have to deal with, and you guys can talk to this as well, is that just when people are making their schedule and they're looking at a national schedule and they're looking at what their big goals are, this weekend, like, we've gotten all these races, you know, starting from the World Cup, and even before that, Rochester in September and on from there, we seem to always land on the rest week for sort of these top tier riders. This is the rest week. They're going to take this week off, and then they're going to race Cincy, and then they're going to race Pan Ams. And that seems to be, so that's sort of the other sort of lull that we run into always with scheduling. I know you have thoughts on this, Dan.
I mean, I just had 2 weeks off in Italy, so I'm ready to race, but,
outstanding.
I don't know. I get it. You know, you have to take a break somewhere, especially if you're based on the East Coast. I mean, after the World Cups, it's like there's a UCI race. There's two UCI races every weekend in October that are within driving distance. And then now there's a new UCI race in Massachusetts on the first weekend of November. And then it's Northampton. It's Supercross. So there's, three UCI. You can literally race two UCI weekends 7 weeks in a row
if
you're based on the East Coast.
And then you have NBX, which is C1.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I did not know that.
But
that's news.
Like from between, I think, whatever it was, like 2 weeks ago and until Nationals, the only weekend I have off of UCI racing is the one after Thanksgiving.
So what do you think about that? You know, new Nationals.
I love
up,
that.
Up to December.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Because if you want to, like, eat with your family at Christmas or other holidays or like go out on New Year's and you want to end your cross season in December, then you can. But I mean, I totally see like why other people liked it in January, but I always hated that time period between NBX and getting to Nationals. I mean, actually, I didn't always hate it. I've gone on like some really amazing road trip odysseys, but in that time frame to like go train in warmer weather and drive down south and make my way across the country or whatever on some, you know, bike odyssey. But I think that having it in December,
worldwide treasure hunt.
Yeah. having it in December, I guess, makes it more like your choice if you would like to continue racing into January, with whatever events are left in the U.S. or go to Europe.
What's going on with those? Wasn't there a Texas race for a while?
And there is. And I think that this is, you know, that was kind of the point I was going to bring
my
up.
Next question
is that like, it's perfect that you said that because I think having Nationals in December makes those races relevant because you have Hendersonville in North Carolina, you have Resolution Cup, even Major Taylor, you have Ruts and Guts December 8th and 9th, you know, right up onto Nationals, so people can ramp up going into Nationals instead of what we've seen, I think, in the past is you get past Pan Ams and then there's this sort of this big lull and then people start, you know, go to Arizona and train and then go race in Nationals, which seems sort of weird.
Must be nice.
I've heard it is. I'll be here. Since we're in Rafa, and this is a sponsor of the Richard Sachs team this year, I want to chat a little bit more just about the team and the makeup and what makes it special. And Dan, go for it.
You had a question there, Bill?
That was the question. What makes it special?
I mean, I think that the person that makes the team special is Richard, obviously. He's been involved. He's been building bikes for at least 45 years at this point. He's been sponsoring teams since the early 70s. I think as a sponsor of some kind, he probably has supported bike racers longer than literally anybody else out there. And he really kind of tries to give us the feeling or the idea that like giving back in the sport is important as bike racers, you know, and like we have this time to race and compete and do our own goals. And after that time passes, it's time for us to kind of like give back to others and bring others up in the sport. And so it's felt really special, particularly this year, because we have two really young riders on the team, Michael Owens and Greg Gonzalez. They're both U23. I think Greg is his first year racing elites. He still can count the number of 1 hour long races he's done on both hands. And it's been really special to like have young guys like that on the team again. Just because like having somebody to like pass on some knowledge to that I feel like I've accumulated, it's just been fun. And like also just they're goofy kids and it's interesting to have kids around.
Anything to add to that? Just about the team in general. I mean, just, you know, every team has a different feel to it, a different culture.
I just like this team because it feels really close knit. We hang out through the weekend. We'll have dinner together. I don't know. It just feels like a good group of people that I look forward to hanging out with every weekend through the fall. And it's been, I don't know, it's just like a family. It's like my cyclocross family.
Every once in a while we fight.
Yeah.
how many times on the weekend do you have to answer questions either about your frame material or your brakes?
I mean, most people know what's up. They know what we're doing. Occasionally I get questioned about it.
I'm sure it's all positive because you have a lot of people that don't want to move forward into disc.
I mean, a lot of people are like, that's so cool. Yeah. And then other
for
people.
For those that don't know, I mean, you can see over here on the bike, the cantilever brake still on there. And it was only, what, 2 years ago that we were like, you know, counting the difference between disc brakes and cantilever brakes out there. And now it's not even close.
I mean, honestly, my favorite feature about that bike is the 1-inch steer tube.
Okay, yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. Anybody remember those 1-inch steer tubes? Really? No? Yeah, exactly. Hasn't been around for a while.
Well, it saves weight.
I mean, that's literally why he won't build 1-1/8 forks, is because the fork is going to be about 0.5 pound heavier, according to him. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I can't tell the difference. But to your question about the frame material and cantilevers, most of the time it's people just yelling statements at me while I'm racing.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's not really like questions. No one's like trying to have a nuanced discussion.
They just
want to
make sure you know.
Yeah. My favorite is when people are like, you're the first guy on cantilevers. And I'm like, cool, I don't care. They don't give UCI points for that.
Maybe
they
should.
Nice if they did.
Yeah, right? You have your own category.
Yeah, why not?
Single speed. That's going to be the future. We're going to have a cantilever brake category.
When enough people get into the sport.
Yeah, we'll do it. It'll be like the LaRoyka version of cyclocross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there you go. No helmets.
I mean, my first cross bike I bought used off a friend, and it had a quill stem on it.
Oh. Yeah.
So this was an upgrade. Threadless, you know? It's a little lighter.
All right. We are at about 35 minutes. I think we should open this up for questions. How does that sound? Please. Yes.
So someone doing their first cyclocross, right, DCCX, do you have any advice, recommendations?
Any advice for first-time cyclocross race?
I mean...
Think back.
Okay. Don't worry so much about like clipping in at the start. You'll just get going and it'll be fine. And I don't know. I feel like you're probably going to be in a field with like 100 people. So
are
that's
you
like
in
a completely.
Four fives?
Yeah.
150 people. Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Yeah, I don't know, set realistic goals. Maybe just like after the first part of the race, like the first 2 minutes, then just like decide that you need to pass like 10 people throughout the race or something like that. Because, you know, it's just like some of that is like you're going to be in a sea of people. But yeah, I think otherwise I would also like, this is a great experience and totally do races that have a lot of people, but then also go to some small, just local races as your other ones where you can actually like, you know, feel like you're not in just a huge crowd and see what that feels like too. And go from there.
I would say have fun.
Yeah.
Don't worry about really the result at all. And just, I think for me, like when I did my first cross race, it was just an experience, and I don't stress about anything. Basically just show up, have a good time, check out the course.
Don't quit.
Yeah. Don't quit. And hang out afterwards, have a beer, cheer everybody on. Just, I think the biggest difference between cyclocross and road racing for me was always that, in road racing, your race is over and you leave. You just go home. In cyclocross, it's like very normal for people to hang out for hours and just like come back to the race and like see other races. And I think that's like the best part about it, is just like getting, especially if you're the first race of the day, it means you get to watch everybody else do it, you know? And that's like a great learning opportunity, but it's also like a great hangout opportunity and a social opportunity. And, you know, it's like, cyclocross definitely has the best like social scene in cycling, in my opinion. So take advantage of that. It's not all about the racing.
Also, this isn't just like for your first race, but always with any cyclocross race, I feel like persistence is like the best quality that you can have. I mean, I take that into my races with me every time I think about that. And, you know, it's like, a lot of the time, like depending on the course conditions or whatever, like everybody in the race falls. Like, you know, like there's a lot of, like if it's a muddy race, like it's just a matter of like how fast you can get back up and get going or whatever. You know, not everybody falls, but a lot of people will fall. So it's like, you know, just keep going and be persistent about it and always like just carry forward momentum and don't quit.
All right. I will give you some technical advice. I've heard all the touchy feel good stuff. First off, when you get your number, don't put your pins through the little holes in the number. Those are not for pins.
But has he ever done any bike race before?
Okay. So you know
he
that.
He knows how to pin the
make
number,
sure,
Bill. Jesus, make, this isn't.
Hey, make sure you know which side the number goes on. I can tell
don't
you somebody on the
left.
Don't
put it upside down.
Don't put it upside down. Okay. That's that part. Second part, more cyclocross specific. There are no extra points for cantilever brakes or for staying on your bike. So if
And this happens a lot in the Cat 4 or 5, in the lower categories. You get up to the UCI level, they're like, it's faster if I get off my bike and run this. And they're off and they're going. And you'll get into this crowd. You know, don't feel like there's a crossing guard up there and you have to wait your turn if everybody's trying to ride, especially like through the hill and that kind of stuff. Get off your bike, run by everybody. You know, that's the number one advice, because everybody wants to try to ride everything. And a lot of times it's faster just to get off and run. And then the third thing that I, to go with what Dan was saying about watching races later in the day, and especially when the UCI men and women race, is that watch a couple races right after yours and watch where you ride and watch the lines that you take and where those lines are burned in. And I guarantee you, by the time that these guys are on the course, those lines are going to be completely different, because they ride it, they choose lines that are much faster, they're going at a faster rate, and they just have more experience in making those turns than not just you personally, than all those other fields. So it's really interesting just to watch the evolution and just how, when you get better, where things change on a course. And I mean that's the part that I enjoy just throughout the day of seeing these races.
Also, sorry, we're going on this for way too long, but now I have thought of
other
things.
They're all about tangents. Go.
Yeah. make sure to get to the start grid, like, you know, well in advance, 15 minutes, 20 minutes before, be over there so that you don't like miss anything and, you know, be flustered, whatever, just like be there early and ready. And then what was the other thing I was going to say? I totally forgot now, but that was important. You should do that. Oh, pre-ride. Go for a pre-ride. Yeah. Ride the course. Because you could also just not have thought of doing that.
This is true. Any other questions? Yes, yes.
Really, a few years ago, you had a chance to go race in Belgium. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, people that are in cyclocross think of Belgium as sort of like, you know, the holy land of racing. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like, what your experiences were there?
I'm going to repeat his question just for these microphones, just about your experience when you got to race in Belgium. I think after it sort of came about with Charm City, which was sort of a cool story.
At Charm City, they had a raffle, and the prize for it was a trip to Belgium. And the guy who actually won the raffle said he didn't really have the time to go, but give it to one of the women who was on the podium that weekend. And I had actually been on the podium both days that weekend at Charm City. And I guess it got offered to the women who were on the podium, and I said I would definitely do it. And so I ended up with the trip. They may have offered it to other girls also who were on the podium. But anyways, I ended up with a trip. It was great. And I went to race the Koppenberg, and that was amazing. It was really cool to just see the spectacle of how they put on a cross race there. And, you know, just, I mean, everything from, like, you know, the after party tents that are enormous and, like, banquet dinner going on in there, and like the dance party tents, and then like even just to like how they do a porta potty, like they have like urinal sticks. It's the weirdest thing.
The bells.
Yeah. And there's like six dudes standing around it peeing, and there's no walls, and it's on the side of a bike race course. You know, it's just like, I don't know, it's just all these things are different. I guess, I don't know. It's just like amazing to have that experience, see what it's like. And then, so that was just like a 4 or 5 day trip. I went over for that one race, and then I ended up going back, in February, end of January, February, that same season, but it was like, you know, the next year, calendar year, whatever. But I ended up going back and racing, like 5 more races, in like a 2-week span of time. And, that was super great. And, it was cool to see that I could do similarly in the races there
that I could do here. So I think I got like 21st or something at Koppenberg, which was a C1. And, you know, that was like comparable to how I do here or at the time. And then at my last race there, which was a C2, I got my first UCI point in Europe. So I got 10th place. So that was cool just to see that it was like something that was totally doable. So, you know, for any women racing here who think like, maybe I should just go try it. Totally just go try it.
Well, do you think that, I mean, this is always something that I see where as much as in women's cycling, there's a lot of way to go. And I think that, you know, some things have come along nicely. I think that in the U.S., the level of racing is the same, if not higher than Europe, not necessarily on the men's side, but I feel like the women, like what you're racing against this weekend is going to be, given a couple riders at the top, maybe accepted, but other than that, is going to be the same strength field than you're going to find in Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are literally women in the races here that are able to ride in the front in Europe, yeah. But then there's also a lot of women who are like in the mid-range who could be in the mid-range there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. More questions?
Personal question. Yes. For Dan and for the other guests.
You don't have to tell him where he lives now. Y'all can figure that out later.
So, cats or dogs, which one do you think you should see more at cross races?
All right, hang on. The question is, should there be more cats or dogs at cross races?
Is that the question? Or is it like, do you have a preference for cats and dogs? And then part two is, which one do you should see more of at races? You should definitely just keep seeing dogs at races, because cats outside is weird. I personally have a cat whom I love, but when she is no longer with me, I plan to get a German Shepherd, because that's been my childhood dream.
Do you have a leash for your cat?
No. No. It's not an outdoor cat. She is afraid of loud noises, life. Like, I open... you know, some cats, like, want to just get out, you know? I will open the front door, and I will leave it open, and she'll, like, walk over to it and be like, what's out there? And then, like, a car will drive by, and she will just hide under the couch for a half an hour. You know, like, there's no chance of her going outside.
I like dogs, but also, like, it's kind of... like, one time I was put in charge of watching Buddy, which is our team dog. Richard and Deb have a dog that is very small.
It's a Maltese.
It's a Maltese, and it comes with us to all the bike races and goes around in a little backpack with Deb and goes to the pit. It's in the pit with Deb and hangs out with us, you know, at our tent and stuff. And so Buddy's, like, our mascot. And one time at Charm City, I was put in charge of watching Buddy, and then I tried to take him out of the backpack and put the leash on him, and it didn't happen fast enough, and he ran. He, like, jumped out of the bag and ran under all the course tape and, like, straight line to the pit to go to Deb and Richard in the pit. And he managed to... It was the men's UCI race at that time, and he managed to go directly under a rider's wheel and tumbled and went, like, somehow he didn't get hurt. It was amazing. But anyways, I like dogs more than cats, but I don't know how many should be at a race, or at least in my care.
Julie Lockhart can bring her cats to races. Everyone else should probably not.
Is that a thing that happens?
Yeah, you've never seen Julie's cats?
No.
It's weird, but amazing. If anybody knows Julie Lockhart.
Yeah, there's a certain number of national championships you have to win before you're allowed to.
Yeah, I don't remember a year of me racing where she wasn't national champion. So
this past year.
Oh, whatever. Wasn't I haven't seen her yet, so.
Yeah. All right.
Any more pet questions? Grooming tips?
Taking all questions. Yeah, I prefer whatever. I'll answer too. I'm married to a veterinarian. I can't say no to any animals. So that's. I think we did it.
Are you guys gonna win this weekend?
Sure. Sure.
Podium?
Sure.
All right. Both these guys are going to be on the podium.
I haven't even looked at the start list. A few years ago, I was kind of obsessed with Cross Results Predictor, and then I was like, this is unhealthy and giving me way too much anxiety. So I stopped. I just don't look at that stuff anymore.
There you go. There's your racing tip right there. All right. Well, thank you very much, Dan. Thank you, Britley.
Thank you.
Thank you to Rafa. Again, I didn't get a chance to do this at the beginning, just to quickly sing the praises of everyone here from Rafa and this whole establishment. It's amazing that we have this type of space in D.C. It's something that has been missing, and to be able to bring in folks like this and have these talks that are happening a lot, have the rides. If you haven't been on one of their rides, come out on the weekend. Come out on when? Tuesday nights? What other nights are we looking at? Come out for a ride.
No, Friday morning ride?
Yeah, how about tomorrow?
Yeah, I need to do a ride tomorrow. All right.
Come on the moon ride tomorrow, because Rafa will be bringing coffee and pastries afterwards. So moon ride at Haynes Point.
Oh, okay. What time is that?
Noon. It's called the noon ride because
it's
at noon.
Oh, the noon ride. I thought you said new.
No. Oh.
Noon is good. I like noon.
All right, go.
You can edit this part out.
Oh, we're not editing anything out.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.